Let us be opening our Bibles to Ecclesiastes chapter 12. We want to talk today about before it all ends. Before it all ends. Ecclesiastes chapter 12. Remember now your Creator in the days of your youth. Before the difficult days come and the years draw near when you say, I have no pleasure in them. While the sun and the light, the moon and the stars are not darkened and the clouds do not return after the rain. In the day when the keepers of the house tremble and the strong men bow down. When the grinders cease because they are few. And those that look through the windows grow dim. When the doors are shut in the streets, and the sound of grinding is low. When one rises up, the sound of a bird, and all the daughters of music are brought low. Also, they are afraid of height, and of terrors in the way. When the almond tree blossoms, the grasshopper is a burden, and desire fails. For man goes to his eternal home, and the mourners go about the streets. Remember your Creator before the silver cord is loosed, or the golden bowl is broken, or the pitcher shattered at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the well. Then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher, all is vanity. And moreover, because the preacher was wise, he still taught the people knowledge. Yes, he pondered and sought out and set in order many proverbs. The preacher sought to find acceptable words, and what was written was upright, words of truth. The words of the wise are like goads, and the words of scholars are like well-driven nails given by one shepherd. And further, my son, be admonished by these. Of making many books there is no end, and much study is wearisome to the flesh. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. The book of Ecclesiastes seems to me to be written by Solomon, though that happens to be a controversial point for a good number. I myself find too many identifying markers to not trace it to him. It was written by a king in Jerusalem according to chapter 1 verse 1 and also there in chapter 1 verse 12. He had excelled all before him in wisdom and wealth. That's there according to chapter 2 verse 7. So for me, Solomon is the most likely candidate, though others are free to form their own opinions and perspectives. No one may really be able to be dogmatic about it, and that's fine. Using the words of the book, it was written by one who calls himself the Koheleth, the professor or the preacher, or the teacher. He sets out to examine life from under the sun. And ever so often, he will punch through that canopy and introduces God into that story. But by and large, he is conducting a survey, and he systematically converges to a conclusion, namely, that any endeavor to try and make sense of life apart from God is ultimately going to be an exercise in futility. It is vain. LeBron James was interviewed a day after the helicopter crash in Calabasas, California. They claimed the life of Kobe Bryant, his 13-year-old daughter Gianni, and seven others. And he said, it's just too much. The story is too much. It doesn't make any sense. It's surreal. But the universe just puts things into your life, and I guess when you live in the right way or have given everything to what you're doing, things happen organically, and it's not supposed to make sense. He was one of the all-time greatest Lakers. The man has two jerseys hanging up at Staples Center. It's just crazy. Now you can hear the profound sense of bafflement and disorientation and shell shock in his words as he had just passed Kobe on the all-time scoring list and was then asked about this news. Now, I get that not everyone will really know much about Kobe Bryant, but for those who watched him play, they will likely forever remember where they were when they heard about the news of his death. He was 41, that's my age. He bypassed the travel trail and footpath described here in this chapter. So even this much is not always guaranteed if one's life is cut short by disease or, say, by an accident. The bottom line is that death can come at any moment, yet if it does not, we will succumb to aging. This is the only trajectory that we know. This is the only development that life takes. There is no dialing it back or decelerating it. Well, what the writer does in the early part of the book is walk the readers down a series of what proved to be dead-end streets. You've read the book. I trust that you're aware of that. He doesn't start out by saying that this is a dead-end street. He simply walks down it, and he verbally describes it, and then he reports back what we would all be inferring from his testimony, that, hey, this is a dead-end street. It doesn't really go anywhere. At one point he says, I applied my heart to wisdom, and I'll be as intelligent as I can possibly be. Of course, it's great to be educated. You could be James Holzhauer on Jeopardy, nailing every question. But it doesn't answer the longings of the heart. And he says that there happened to be a cul-de-sac. He then tried madness or folly, a farcical approach to life and the world, and he realized that if everything is funny, nothing is really funny. And when he worked that out, he said that the party life and the party scene goes nowhere. There's got to be far more than just gags and giggles. Then he tried to just work all the time and gain wealth, and he reasoned, if I can just get enough stuff in my palace or out there on my patios, if I can have my own parks and my own holiday homes or all this prime real estate, then I'd be set. Well, he was wrong. And then he tried wine, women, and song, as they say. It's all there in the book. And long before Mick Jagger of the Rolling Stones jumped up to declare it, he had concluded, I can't get no satisfaction. There's no way that down these streets I can find my hope or my true rock of refuge. I thought I could make a straight line to safety, security, and peace, but it was a circuitous, meandering route, and I was stuck in a maze. Dazed and confused and just empty. Now then, why does he do all of that? Well, strategically, he's trying to show that there is a way that we can all make sense of the riddle of life. And he points the reader to the one who makes all things beautiful in his time, namely God, the Creator, the one who, according to chapter 3, verse 11, has set eternity in our hearts. I think also of what the prophet Isaiah said in Isaiah chapter 51. Isaiah chapter 51, there in verse 10. Isaiah 51, verse 10. Are you not the one who dried up the sea, the waters of the great deep, that made the depths of the sea a road for the redeemed to cross over? So the ransomed of the Lord shall return and come to Zion with singing, with everlasting joy on their heads. They shall obtain joy and gladness. Sorrow and sighing shall flee away. You see, God had a plan when the Hebrew children could see no immediate plan as they had approached that Red Sea. And God has a plan also in purifying us in the wilderness and giving us the promised land in heaven wherein Eden is restored and the tree of life is there that we might freely take from. I'm going to go ahead and trace a line through this chapter of Ecclesiastes 12 by noting that it begins with a call or a plea. It then follows with a picture, and then it will wrap up with a punchline. So there you have it, a plea, a picture, and a punchline. Three P's in Ecclesiastes. First of all, a plea. This is not a suggestion by the writer. Rather, he's calling out, he's issuing an exhortation or a commandment, if you like. He says, remember now. Now, if you are reading from the American Standard Version or the English Standard Version or a few other translations, you're going to see that he says, remember also thy Creator in the days of thy youth. Why also? Well, it's not the first call to remembrance in his book. If you allow your eyes to go back up the page there, he says in chapter 11, verse 8, but if a man lives many years and rejoices in them all, yet let him remember the days of darkness, for they will be many. All that is coming is vanity. And I think we're tempted, even before we get to that point in the reading of the book of Ecclesiastes, to just be throwing up our hands and saying, this sounds quite morbid and macabre and ghastly. I don't think I really like where all this is going. It may take you up on the one hand and then just bring you crashing down on the other. Now, it's not for the sake of being lurid or melodramatic. No, friends. He's rather being honest and realistic. Dark days are a part of the journey of life. They are. And there are going to be those times where we feel that the jigsaw puzzle of our life does not really seem to match what is there on the cover of the box that we thought that we bought. Because the picture on the box is a picture where everything is just charming and tantalizing, quite inviting and enamoring. A beautiful picture of a brook or meadow with trees and flowers and birds perched and singing on a crisp, bright blue day. And when we pick up the pieces, we say, I'm not so sure that this is here. Maybe I've lost a few pieces on the floor and perhaps they got vacuumed up. So he says, remember God, because God is always going to be the answer for you and for me, particularly when life will not really make sense. It's entirely intentional here. Don't go back down the other roads again. Instead, he's saying, abandon all of that. Repudiate all of that. Walk away from self-sufficiency or any ideology that says that you can find all answers simply by looking from within or through buying into what the world is trying to sell you. Focus rather on your Creator. Now, what exactly does that look like? All right, very good question. Let me present it to you in 3D or with three words that start with D. What's it mean, I remember my Creator? Number one, that I was designed by Him. Psalm 100, verse 3. 100, verse 3. Know that the Lord, He is God. It is He who made us and not we ourselves. We are His people and the sheep of His pasture. What does all of this say? I am a designer model. And so are you. All right, maybe not for Calvin Klein, for Ralph Lauren or Gucci. But for God, yes. We were intricately formed. Our inward parts, He knit together in our mother's womb. He's responsible for that. We are not a chemical accident. We are not the product of time plus matter plus chance. He designed you. Remember that when you remember Him. But then secondly, you may depend upon Him because He is almighty and all-powerful. He knows everything about you. He knows exactly who you are and how you operate and how all the bits and pieces fit. Let Him work out the jigsaw puzzle because it's much less frustrating, right? And many times God will bring us to places simply so that we can remember that. When Jonah was in the belly of the fish, he said, this is Jonah chapter 2, verse 9, when my soul fainted within me, I remembered the Lord. I remembered the Lord. When he could see no way out, right? And my prayer went up to you into your holy temple. Those who regard worthless idols forsake their own mercy. but I will sacrifice to you with the voice of thanksgiving. I will pay what I have vowed. Salvation is of the Lord. He is the only real source. Here was Jonah, helpless as he could be in the belly of that fish. There was nothing he could do but pray. Only God could solve that problem. He was learning dependence upon his Maker. And then, thirdly, I will delight in him. See, we ought to offer to God the intensity of a full and vibrant love. Have you ever fallen in love before? Have you read the Song of Solomon? Some blush to do so. I will rise now and go about the city, in the streets and in the squares, and I will seek the one I love. When I found the one I love, I held him and would not let him go. That's Song of Solomon, chapter 3, verses 2 through 4. You see, it's not just about recognition of the existence of the lover. It's about longing and clamoring for his presence. You do not want to be apart. And while that's a book that celebrates romantic love, our gravitational pull toward God should be just as strong, if not stronger, friends. May we experience a restlessness for him, knowing that that is the only way we can have true peace in him. Or as the psalmist says, Psalm 137, verse 6, "Let my tongue stick to my mouth if I do not remember you, O Jerusalem." Nothing casual about that statement there. Just as the Jewish people were obsessed and preoccupied with the city of David, that should be likened to our longing for God as we think upon him. Remember him. It's a plea that is also urgent, and he puts a time frame on it. In the days of your youth, in other words, do not let the excitement of being young cause you to forget and neglect God. Or if you like, get on this before you start getting letters from the AARP, the American Association of Retired Persons. They'll find you, and they're going to want your membership and your support. Put all that in the mail for you to take a look at. Don't fall for the lie that the serious stuff can wait. That's effectively what he's saying. How readest thou? Don't buckle to the notion that says youth is for fun, age is for business, and old age, why, that happens to be for spiritual reflection. No. Don't be thinking, I'll get to this somewhere down the line when I'm good and ready. Don't be using the best years of your life and neglecting this plea and this plan. Take action to what is within reach. Embrace opportunity and seek to grow for God and His glory in your earliest days possible. Now then, the picture of the often unpleasant physical deterioration of old age. Is that not what follows here? That's what I see here in our reading. Before the difficult days come and the years draw near, when you say, I have no pleasure in them. The springtime of life will indeed give way to the chill of winter. The rain clouds will come. They will turn daylight to twilight. You can count on that. So he gave us the plea, remember your Creator, do it now, because our lives are headed inexorably toward decay and the grave. You know, many can still remember the immortal words that President Reagan penned to the American people, November 5, 1994. I now begin the journey that will lead me into the sunset of my life. And he shared that with the American public in a farewell letter where he had mentioned his diagnosis with Alzheimer's disease. We could at least appreciate that honesty. It's a journey that we're on, all of us, but you know, as you look there at the world, they're going to try to present a different picture for you, especially as you look there at the magazines at the checkout stand, or I noticed this especially on the airlines. You'll see all those advertisements and those magazines nestled in the pocket there right in front of you. Who are these people? Plastic surgeons and people with diaphragms with no belly. You'll never grow old, and you can turn back the clock and reduce the effects of aging, or maybe even just reverse completely the effects of aging. Just call this number and we'll get you all set up. And you're sitting there on that plane and you're just trying to suck in your tummy as best as you can, but then you're saying, well, who are these people? This is not real, is it? It's not lasting. But the Bible shows us it all from start to finish, the good, the bad, and yes, indeed, the ugly. There is a quasi-comical scene, I feel, as you look through this chapter here. It's a somber picture, yes. It's also quite realistic. But the parody of I've Got Friends in Low Places by Garth Brooks is, says the comedian Tim Hawkins, all my friends have hip replacements because they all fell down in the garage or their basements. We're old and pale and our bones are frail. Now, yes, laughter can be good for medicine for the soul. And there are at times some amusing or eccentric analogies here. But he's effectively given us a picture of our lives. Our life is as a house. There are sounds in the night, annoying creaks here and there, signs of wear and tear. It's in need of repair, drawing attention to deterioration. This individual here is shaky. He happens to be stooping over, perhaps searching for reading glasses. You look at this here in verse 3, the keepers of the house tremble and the strong men bow down. Hands are weaker. Nerve control is not what it once was. You have more back problems and pains. You hunch over or you show up there at the doctor's office and you step up on that scale. And then there's that little metal bar that they drop on top of your head. And a reading is made for you and you say, now wait, look at that again. That can't quite be right. But yes, it is. Inches are being knocked off about every time that you show up. This is when the grinders cease because they are few. Can the steak be made softer? Hit it harder with the meat tenderizer? You're losing teeth and may have to get some dentures. And those that look through the windows grow dim. You find yourself squinting a lot. You might need a new prescription for glasses, or you might have to have cataract surgery. That's what verse 3 is all about. And as you look there at verse 4, as we age, we find we have less in common with the rising generation, and social contact can decline. Activity at the meal ceases and is no longer heard. Now, some take these as metaphors for the lips and the ears. He wakes up at the sound of birds, not so much that he can hear them especially well, but because he's now an insomniac, I think. He may have once had a day or two shouting at youngsters, turn that music down! But now he has to say, can you turn that volume up? Because he's hard of hearing. Might need to get a hearing aid. Verse 5, suddenly he's afraid of heights when he never was before. He used to enjoy the roller coaster rides, but now he won't even dare to look at them hardly. I mean, even just getting into the spinning teacups at the theme park can be asking a lot to do that there with the grandkids. He's leaving sporting events early to avoid being jostled by crowds. He's afraid to drive much, especially at night. He has more of a chance of breaking his leg in the grocery store than breaking 80 on the golf course. Oh, the almond tree has blossomed too. Huh? What's this about? Rich color gave way to gray hairs, and then white hairs, and then maybe even no hair. Now, I know that some have a variety of colors that they apply to try to mask all of that, but if you just let nature take its course, there's going to be that fading. The grasshopper is a burden, and desire fails. Perhaps that's a reference to impotence. And yet, why is all of this happening? Well, we're told. Man is headed to his eternal home. Or put another way, he's on the last stop on the freeway. There's only one exit left. And after this, it happens to be obituary time. Yes. Well, what's he doing here? He impresses upon us the absolute finality that shall come with death. Verse 6. Remember your Creator before the silver cord is loosed, or the golden bowl is broken, or the pitcher shattered at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the well. It only takes one link to give way for the cord to snap. It only takes one pulmonary embolism, and we are likened to broken earthenware, or we are a deserted whale. The transience of simple routine tasks leave an indelible mark. There's a last time coming for every job that is done. And there's a last time coming for every journey that is taken. And when we enter the home of the deceased, we might indeed pause to see a coffee cup left on the counter, or the last newspaper that was read resting quietly on the kitchen table. Deafening silence. Yet let us be stirred to action by this reality. Derek Kidner, in his work, The Message of Ecclesiastes, writes, "Death has not yet reached out to us. Let it rattle its chains at us and stir us to action." A great picture, the rattling of chains. Or it's like there in Macbeth, isn't it, with the tolling of the bell. "Hear it not, Macbeth, for it is a nail that summons thee to heaven or to hell." Shakespeare read his Bible, the 1570 Geneva Bible. And then the punchline. It's there in verse 13. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. "Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil." Now that section there of actually verses 9 through 14 functions as an epilogue or a commentary on the entire book. Words were chosen carefully, with great craftsmanship, if you will, prudently. There are many books. It's possible to be involved in constant research. It's quite agonizing to be poring over literature in the library. It's going to make you weary. And it can be profitable for a time, but it's not going to help you come eternity. You know, one preacher put it this way: the mind can secure only what the seat can endure. He was not a long-winded preacher, much to the liking of those within the congregation. We can only fill our heads with so much information. Then it's like the tailgate is open and it's dropping off out the back. But these words are different, because he is pointing our minds to that which is eternal. And that which is eternal is that which is true and real. That is all that really matters in life. So these words of the wise are like goads, verse 11. Cattle prods that the farmers use to steer the beasts of burdens where they want them to go. They have a jabbing, striking impact. Or they are like well-driven nails that can linger in a wall for a very long time. You know, without nails, we'd hardly have any carpentry or construction work done, right? So you see, their words both direct us and they also establish us. And they flow from one shepherd, meaning that they are not contradicting but consistent, and are compassionately carried over to us by a concerned shepherd, potentially the fullness being in the good shepherd, Jesus Christ the righteous. For ultimately, all the truth of the Bible funnels into the person of Jesus and into his words and into his work. And this is the whole duty of man. Now, I mean, if you're like me, I'm going to be leaning forward a little more. This causes us to sit up and pay attention. Our works are being watched and weighed. Are we going to be found wanting? Now, time and action are the two elements here. When you were 5 and your birthday came around, it seemed like an age waiting for it. because as that birthday came around, 20% of your life had passed. When you turned 50 and your birthday came around, it seemed like it came hot on the heels of the last one because only 2% of your life had passed. Swiftly, we're turning life's daily pages. Swiftly, the hours are changing to years. Time, says Irma Bombeck, hangs heavy for the bored, eludes the busy, flies by for the young, and runs out for the aged. We're aware of all of this. We're familiar with that. Truly our days, says Job, in Job chapter 7, verse 6, fly by faster than a weaver's shuttle when all is said and done. And God, who created us and fashioned us with an eternal soul, we shall soon go to stand before and see Him who made us and give an account. It won't be very long. In 2018, the Washington Post asked Kobe Bryant about his creative endeavors after retiring in 2016. He was running a children's podcast called The Punies. Said the interviewer, "Why can't you turn your mind and your ambition off? 5 NBA championships, an MVP, you did okay. Why can't you just retire to the islands of Fiji and say it's been a good life for 40 years? I think I'm done now." Kobe answered, "Because I found something that I love to do every bit as much as I love playing basketball. I can't stop. Storytelling for me is that I love the process of creating stories. I love the process of editing stories. I love the process of someone else having a great idea and bringing that to fruition, and I love that I can help them to do that. So it's more like I just love it. I have to do it. I wake up in the morning, and this is what I do." Yet all of that stopped before he really got started with it. And you know, for any one of us here, indeed, we might have finished volume one of our life, but we may not hardly get to cracking even into volume number two. We do not know what a day could bring forth. That's why now is the accepted time. And today is the day of salvation. You see, our lives are but vapor. This is in essence what the writer is telling us in the book of Ecclesiastes. And earthly endeavors are just grasping at the wind. There's nothing here that you can really take with you. So, dear ones, before it all ends, make your life right with your Maker. That's the punchline. Be diligent to be found by Him in peace, without spot and blameless. And the only way that can be possible is that we plunge ourselves into the blood of Christ, which flows freely from Calvary. And that is accessible to us in the waters of baptism. He's the one who can cleanse every spot and every stain and every sin. So get into Christ by being baptized, and then understand that though the outward man perishes, the inner man can be renewed day by day. Don't you want that for you, for your soul's well-being? I trust that you would. Respond to God's invitation. If we can help you, make your way down to the front while we stand now and sing.